today on KT's Got Game. In the absence of KT, we have a special guest. We talk a little bit about the Lakers being old and slow with some of the comments that Kobe Bryant has made. We also talk about the Avery Johnson firing. We also talk about D. Will complaining about having fatigue, the Clippers being the best team in the West, possibly even in the NBA. We do a little this or that and bring in some classic football quarterbacks. We also talk a little bit about some classic urban movies from the early 90s. So hope you guys enjoy the show. KT Got Game.
Wait for a bit or more. Seesaw on summit that you never seen before. It came back, reversed. I need proof for what it's worth.
All right, today on the KT Got Game show, we have a special guest with KT out. I'm going to do a short introduction for him. One of our good and close friends, Jabbar Washington. He's a very modest person, so he doesn't like to bring up the fact that he's a three-time state champion for the North High Polars, but I will bring that up.
All right, yeah.
And, you know, also he played some Division I basketball in Portland. Played, where else did you play at?
Cal Poly and Portland State University. Here you go, talking about old stuff
so
again.
So I'm bringing that up just because I want all the listeners out there to know that you know, he knows the game and also knows the game from a coaching perspective as well. So I just want to thank him for coming, for being on the show today. And, you know, you got anything you want to say, any words to the people?
No problem, man. I'm here when you guys need me. It's a pleasure. I'm a fan, so, you know.
Thanks for being here, Jabbar.
Let's get it done today.
So, yeah, so we're going to start off first with, you know, the Lakers and some of the comments that I've heard from Kobe Bryant. You know, they took the loss to Philadelphia, and he made a statement by saying that, you know, we're just too old. Our team is old and we're slow. We look like we were stuck in the mud out there. And when you look at LA's team and you look at the way they're built, I feel that they that the perimeter defense is probably where they struggle at the most. I mean, what can you say anything about that, or just what are your views on that?
I think Kobe slowed down a little bit. And, you know, Nash, who's never been known as a defensive player. And then you got Artest on the wing, who's a more physical guy, but he's still slow. So they're going to have problems with a lot of the faster guards in the West, the Chris Pauls, the Mike Conleys, those kind of guards. Drew Holiday gave them trouble.
Yes. Yep.
They're going to struggle, you know, with players like that. Also with, you know, quick twos or quick threes.
Right.
Because they're a big team. They're built more for the playoffs.
Right.
And they're built more for kind of the opposite of how they play.
Right.
One thing that's weird to me is that, you know, they had this problem with Mike Brown, who was just a defensive guy. But they hired, like, the opposite guy, and they got the same problem. So initially the problem was there was no offense. There was no continuity because Mike Brown's just a defensive guy.
Right.
But then you bring in D'Antoni, who's just an offensive guy.
Right.
So you're giving up 100 to 110 points a night, which doesn't make much sense.
It doesn't at all. And Tone, you can kind of chime in on this as well. You know, I mean, what do you see the problems with the Lakers in terms of that? I mean, are they old? Are they slow? I mean, can they compete for a championship? I mean, with the way that they're playing right now, do you think that they'll?
I think I saw you pose that question up here, and I think this year or nothing. If they keep this lineup next year, it's not happening. I think they need to go for it this year. Obviously, they're trying to, and if they had their druthers, they would go all the way.
Right.
But I think Dwight Howard's turning into an old robot, man. He's kind of struggling down the court.
Is he healthy? Is he healthy, though?
No, a report came out that he's not 100% healthy, and he doesn't look 100% healthy because he's not nearly as explosive as he used to be on the defensive end or offensive end. He's not as active on the boards. So I think, you know, he's not as healthy. But one thing I will say about the Lakers is they haven't had much time to gel as a team.
Right.
And for veterans and for, like I said, it's hard to judge them now in the first third of the season because they haven't played a lot together. All of them didn't play together in the preseason and in training camp. So they're just kind of getting their feet wet together. But they're kind of running out of time because –
Yeah, it's getting to be, you know, it's almost that all-star break. We're almost at the halfway point of the season. And, you know, if these things aren't being changed soon, you know, they're going to have problems later on in the season. So, you know, when I look at how San Antonio's built their team and what they've done, when you look at them, while they're still good defensively to a certain extent, is that their older players are front court players. You know, Duncan, you know, he's an older guy, but you still got Kawhi Leonard, Gary Neal. You got younger guys who can come on the perimeter and defend. I mean, you look at the series against San Antonio last year. I mean, for the exception of the last four games, we know how it ended, but those guys, you know, they could defend. They could, you know, they could get after Durant and, you know, with Steven Jackson and different players like that. And I don't see, as in terms of a perimeter players, I don't see that type of I don't see that with the Lakers now.
And there's two things with San Antonio. One thing is guys know their role.
Right.
Because they've been together. And another thing is Popovich and that organization, they know what they're doing. I have my roommate from college is an assistant with San Antonio, and he bounced around a couple teams, you know, as a player, and now he's an assistant with San Antonio. And he's always talked about how professional they are and how Pop gives you a role and you have to fit in or you're not going to be there.
Right.
Kind of like, you know, different programs have different guys to switch to football. You know, the Patriots have Patriot guys. That's kind of how they're built. And they're built for the long haul. So Tim Duncan's not playing 40 minutes. And you know, they do what they got to do. They're professional. You know, they beat good teams, beat the teams they're supposed to beat. And the teams that it's a coin flip, they win half of them.
Right.
And that's how you get it done.
And the last thing on the Lakers, who do you think for this right now, who would you place the blame on for their troubles? Who would you, you know, in terms of, you know, I'm looking at it like as a management issue at this point. You know, I think the switching of the coaches, the players they've brought in, I think losing Odom was a big loss for them. They haven't been the same since they lost Lamar Odom. And I didn't realize how big of a role he played within the Lakers, you know, until he's gone now. You know, so some of these things I kind of blame on management and say, you know, what were you thinking?
I kind of think that they didn't know how big of a role he played either, because he was important for that second unit. And I'm not a guy. I don't just blame D'Antoni or management. But I think as an organization, players, coaches, GMs, I think they all are at fault. But on the management piece, the team is assembled okay if you had the right coach.
Right. That's
so
true.
So Phil Jackson's there. I don't think we're having this discussion about,
I agree.
You know, or a Larry Brown or other seasoned coaches. I'm not a believer in coaches that aren't well-rounded. It doesn't work in basketball, football, college football. You have to be, because you got to play both sides.
Yep.
So the Lakers can score the ball, but they're giving up so many points that it hurts them a lot of times. So.
Definitely. And we can transition. We talked about the Lakers, and we talk about them often with their struggles. You know, we'll transition to some other topics. Deron Williams and Avery Johnson in that whole situation. So, you know, I just want to get, you know, Producer Tone, you know, in the last show we kind of talked about, I think it was one of the shows we talked about, is Deron Williams, is he a coach killer? And, you know, KT kind of defended him and said, nah, you know, he said you know, Williams wanted, D. Will wanted Sloan to be present, and that's where all that, the rift came in. And now I'm looking at, we see that he criticizes Avery Johnson and saying he's a micromanager. And a week later, after we have that conversation, he's out of there. Avery Johnson is done. So, you know, I kind of want to speak about, I mean, was Avery treated fairly?
In my opinion, no.
I got to say this. Avery Johnson is the youngest looking 47-year-old around. can we agree on
definitely,
that?
Definitely.
He doesn't have pores.
Hey, that's that down south water, man, he's drinking,
seriously,
I'm telling you.
Seriously, man.
Avery take care of himself.
Hey, that's, yeah. Yes, he does.
But he's a type A personality kind of guy though. And I know I look at Avery Johnson and I know Carrick was saying he's not the biggest Avery Johnson fan. I think there are coaches that are like great all around coaches. I think they're coaches that are kind of transition coaches.
Mm-hmm.
I think Avery Johnson was good for what the Nets needed now before they got the Joe Johnsons and all of the players they got. Right. I think they're looking for somebody to kind of get them over the hump now. But it's unfortunate for him because I didn't think he got a fair shake because, I mean, you got a new – you got, what, four new starters or something like that?
Yep.
You got four new starters and some key positions on your team.
You got a new city.
A new city, new stadium, new everything. New team. So he just learned where to park his car at, man.
So. Right. It feels really premature to me. And here's what Williams had to say. He said, "I don't feel responsible as far as I was never consulted." He said, "Nobody asked me what they should do with Avery. If they would have asked, I would have said he needs to be our coach because he was the big reason why I stayed here."
Oh, see,
that says a lot. But I mean, he was talking up a couple weeks ago, and
but it's hard to from our end to speculate on exactly what went down. But I believe that you don't have to say anything if your relationship with your coach is visible, if it's kind of strained,
right?
Or if you guys don't get along the greatest, or maybe it's something we don't know with him and management, or they just didn't think he was doing a good enough job. That's enough to get you out of there in the league. So.
Another thing about my whole take on the situation, when he criticized Avery Johnson, publicly, I would think that hopefully they had that conversation in private to say, look, coach, I think that the offense, you're micromanaging the offense. I need to read and react a little more. I need to be able to get out there and fill out what the defense is doing. And then, we can suggest some plays or you can suggest some. I mean, that's kind of what you do. So if you have that conversation, I'm fine with that. To come out publicly and say, and we know that you're struggling. You're not playing the way you've been playing in the past, 3-4 years. We're not used to seeing you play like this. You play at a way higher level than this. So it kind of looks like, there could be some excuses being made whatever it may be. That's kind of my take on it. I hope he did have that conversation with Avery or had enough respect to have that conversation with him behind closed
doors. Yeah, I hope he did that, and I think he's a professional. And I'm not going to speculate on if they had the conversation or not. But you can look at it from a Darren Williams that maybe Avery's the reason why he's not playing at a high level. A point guard who's a top 5 point guard in the league, you got to give him some rope
to
do his thing.
Definitely.
You got to give him some leeway.
I agree with that.
You can't run a set every time down. That shows your point guard and your team as a whole that you don't trust. You don't trust them. And nobody wants to deal with a coach who has control issues and wants to control everything on the floor. A good coach controls situations.
Nice.
And he controls his substitutions and those things.
Right.
You got to let your players play because ultimately they're the reason why you win and lose games.
So another topic I want to bring up about D. Will is he also brought up something to the fact of he made a statement and he said, I feel fatigued. These 2 years of playing all this basketball, I feel worn down. And I'm thinking to myself, I hope this isn't another excuse. LeBron James
sounds like an excuse.
LeBron James has played 2 years worth of basketball and made a deep run into the playoffs. You didn't even play in the playoffs last year.
Kobe Bryant, you can go down the list.
We can go down the list of all these people who have played these games.
Let's talk about Steve Nash.
You're talking about conditioning. Steve Nash, a 37, 38-year-old guy out there running around and still doing what he's able to do. And you're complaining or saying that, what do you make of that? And I mean, these are some of the most conditioned athletes in the world.
But this is what I'll say. Looking at Darren Williams from college to now, he's always on the border of being out of shape.
Yeah.
Because he carries some extra weight. When he makes a statement like that, my first thought was look at his body. He doesn't have the body of a LeBron or, Kevin Love even dropped 20, 25 right. pounds and he's keeping it off. His weight kind of fluctuates, man.
It does. He looks a little heavier.
He does look a little heavy. I don't know if that's the case, but that's what it looks like. He doesn't look like he has his first step. Every now and again, he'll get to the bucket and he'll sneak you and dunk on you. He's not explosive like that right now. So maybe he is a little worn down, but I wouldn't. That does sound like an excuse. That has nothing to do with Avery Johnson. That has nothing to do with his teammates.
Right.
That's just something that I see in my take on it. It has to be some. He has to take some ownership for some of that.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. Take the ownership, come out and say, look, I'm not playing my best basketball. I got to raise my level of play. You know, last time I checked the standings, they were a 14-14 team. They have better than 14-14 or 500 talent. So
especially in the East.
Especially in the East, where it's not – I mean, come on. Now, the Bulls are leading the Central without – I mean, I don't know if they are now, but I know the Bulls were leading the Central Division without Derrick Rose. So that should tell you
– Indiana's up now, but Bulls are number two. But right. That's a tight division that's lousy.
Right.
Tight, lousy division. Yeah, it is.
So another thing. Well, so we're done with the Avery Johnson and Deron Williams. I wanted to get you fellas' take on that. What about those Clippers, though? I want to talk about the Clippers. I know their 17-win streak just ended, but Tone, do you think these guys are for real? Are the Clippers
for
real?
I think so. I'm going to go see them in 2 weeks.
Nice.
I'm excited about them. I think they're for real. I think they're way better than the Lakers. I think they wrap it up over there. I think they got to watch out for Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I look at them, and I don't see any holes. And I see the deepest team in the league. And I see every championship team has key role players. You got a guy like Matt Barnes, who's averaging 13 points a game. Caron Butler, who just make the shots they're supposed to make.
Man.
And they step up when they're supposed to step up offensively, defensively. You got the best sixth man in the league,
Jamal Crawford.
You got DeAndre Jordan, who worked out with Elijah Wan, and he's looking better offensively.
You see how much he's improved,
right?
Man.
It's crazy. And you got somebody like, you know, Chauncey Billups, who's waiting in the wings, who they don't even have to rush. You got the young stud, Eric Bledsoe.
Oh, my goodness.
You got – that's just a deep team, man. And they're kind of the opposite of the Lakers, where they're gelling now.
Right.
Because they've had a year and some change to play together. And, I mean, you see the product of everybody buying in. You don't hear any of the Vinny Del Negro talk. Like, maybe he's
What happened with that?
Come on, winning solves everything. Winning that, man.
And the engine, Chris Paul.
The best PG in the league, man. It's hands down.
And people aren't complaining because people are getting their shots. So you're on the floor with him. You're going to get your shots.
Jamal Crawford averaging more points than Chris Paul right now.
Right. As he should.
That's great.
As he should.
You're six man.
As he should.
He's dishing out.
And I mean, and everybody's, you got Odom. I mean, you have Grant Hill. I don't think Grant Hill's played a game yet.
He hasn't.
I saw him out there.
They can afford him that time, though.
Yep.
Because there's no rush, because we kind of got it until, you know, they're ready. And when they're ready, they'll step in, and I think people will step down and not rock the boat. But at the beginning of the year, I found something that was extremely interesting. Jamal Crawford said this was the first summer ever where he's touched a basketball. He does not work on his game in the summer. He does not touch a basketball until training camp.
That's not what coaches want to hear.
Right. But he said it on the heels of him being in the gym and working on his game. He said this was the first summer that he was in the gym. He said he took a couple weeks off and he got shots up. And from my perspective, I can see the difference in him in terms of confidence, ball handling, and just being stone cold. I can see the difference, and I think he's a pretty smart guy, so I think he'll have his butt in the gym every summer now.
I'm glad you bring up that point, too, because in an earlier podcast, we talked about J.R. Smith, and, you know, J.R. Smith's kind of having a breakout year, too.
Right.
And J.R. Smith came out publicly and said, look, I was partying too much. I got to New York.
Yeah.
I'm kicking it. I'm hanging out. You know, you young. You got money. You know, you can go to these clubs and do all this drinking and, you know, whatever. You know, you popping bottles.
It's weird being around some NBA players from the past. I know a guy like Gary Payton would party all night.
But
he would put his work in. But
right.
These guys. He'd be smelling like booze in game time.
Right. Hey, and, you know, I got a source who worked with them back then, and he wouldn't go to shoot around. He would go, but he would say, coach, either I'm going to give you what I got to shoot around or I'm going to give it to you in the game. So you got to take what you can get. But he was at a level where he could do that.
Right.
Because certain guys can turn it on and off in an instant, and he was one of the best to do it. But as players get older, they learn to take care of themselves a little better because their bodies don't function like they used to. So I think, you know, it's something that he'll figure out, and he'll find the balance between not going too hard in the off season and, you know, putting enough work in to improve.
And player development is something that we talk about a lot on the show. And it's good to see guys like DeAndre Jordan,
right.
J.R. Smith, Jamal Crawford. I mean, Jamal Crawford's in his 30s. So that just teaches, you know, any young player,
yeah,
that shows you that you can still work on your game. You can still continue to improve. And I think that, you know, that's a testimony for those guys. So
And leadership is incredible.
Ooh, yeah.
Because you don't have any of the riffs because you got Chris Paul there.
Right.
He's grabbing guys by the shirt. He's patting them on the butt. And that stuff is overlooked, man. You got a guy like Chris Paul there, which leading the right wing, a guy like Jamal Crawford, who could start anywhere.
Anywhere.
But you don't hear about him wanting to be traded and need more shots because winning is the cure for everything.
I totally agree.
It's always been that way, and it's always going to be like that.
And I would love to see OKC and the Clippers get it on in the Western Conference Finals.
I think we're going to see that if it works out that way in the brackets, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's the way it looks like. It could.
That's what it looks like. They're going to be 1-2.
They're very similar teams. Imagine if OKC had Harden still and they both had the six man like that.
Yeah, that would be, yeah.
It'd be a mirror.
I heard you guys' the last show, man, and y'all sleeping on my team, man. They're built for the playoffs, the Grizzlies.
We're not sleeping. We've been pumping them up all season.
We gave the Grizzlies their props. And I think that they are a team. They are that sleeper team. And I think that they'll give the Clippers some problems.
I don't think they would beat them in seven games, nor do I think they would beat the Clippers in seven games. But it would be extremely interesting because they have bigs that can pass, rebound, shoot.
They're a deep team.
Then they have Mike Conley. Then they have those role players, the Tony Allens,
yep,
the Jared Bayless's, the Darrell Arthurs that come off the bench and give them, you know, the second team, the second unit, what they need. Scary, man.
Would you say that they're the most physical team out West?
Yes. Oh, yes. They play like a, you know, they play like an East Coast team.
Right.
Because it's, you know, it's a more physical brand of basketball, which the playoffs turn into that kind of basketball.
Yes, it does.
So it's always more physical. The fouls are harder. It's harder to get open. So they're kind of more prepared for that than a team that will go up and down. But I don't think they have the talent, and I don't think they would score enough points on a consistent basis to beat OKC and to beat the Clippers.
How much more exciting is Western Conference basketball this year than Eastern Conference?
It's not even close.
We're talking about it all the time.
It's not even close.
And you know, another team.
Because there's so much youth in the.
Absolutely.
There's so much youth in the West.
The Golden State Warriors.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, who would want to watch those
guys out of nowhere,
play, man?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're, you know, you got Harrison Barnes. You got Steph Curry, who's finally healthy now. I mean, David Lee, he's looking like Kevin Love out there, man. So, you know, I think Mark Jackson's done a great job them, too.
They're a pleasant surprise.
Yeah, they are.
They're really a pleasant surprise.
Not very pleasant for my Timberwolves, but, you know. But I will say that they are exciting to watch, and I think they are. They're a deep team too.
They're four games behind the Clippers, which says a lot.
Ooh, yeah. That's impressive,
right there.
That's impressive.
So, Tone, what do we got next? We got some this or that, or we have anything else on?
You want to talk about Amari coming back?
Oh yeah, Amari coming back. Amari came back yet last game. They lost, but just some questions about that. Tone, I asked Tone first, do you think that him coming back, can he coexist with Melo, and can he fit into what the Knicks are doing?
Well, can K-Love fit into the Wolves system? What happened there? I know it's way different. You can't compare that. New York's got something really good going. They're 21-10 right now.
Right.
I'm interested to see what's going to happen. I didn't watch the game the other night.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I think I heard he's accepting the role off the bench.
Right, which is important.
Now, I will say this. I think, but when you get into the playoffs and you got to play, Amari is going to have to play center. Melo going to have to play the four. You got to put your guns out there. But then where does that leave Tyson Chandler? Like, I don't know. Where does he fit into the equation?
You got to have him on the floor. He's the second most important guy on that team. You saw what happened when he left Dallas.
Right.
They fell to pieces defensively. He's second to KG to me with bringing a defensive like tenacity and changing the culture of defense. Before he got to New York, they were lousy defensively.
Terrible.
So he's not going to put up points, but he's going to make sure his guys are in the right position. He's going to rebound. He's going to block shots. You don't have to call any plays for him. He's the most vocal guy on the court. So I think he'll take minutes from Amari just from that perspective. But you've known me, and KT's known me for years, man. I'm not fond of big guys that don't rebound, man.
And I told KT this. I said,
What are they doing out there then?
I don't think.
That's like a point guard that can't dribble, man.
I don't think that Amari Stoudemire has ever averaged 10 rebounds for a season.
Nah.
And I don't know. And I think that I'm accurate when I say that.
He's making himself a situational guy.
Right.
And I think that's how they're going to use him. They're going to, depending on matchups, he'll play more of the four and play more minutes. But against certain teams, I don't think he'll be on the floor a whole lot because he just – The death of the big man is the jump shot, man.
Yep.
So I'd rather have Melo at the four at the elbow than Amari.
But the thing about it is he's never really been known as a defender either.
Right.
So now you're playing against the Heat. You got Wade driving to the basket. You got Bron driving to the basket. I mean, and then not to mention you have Chris, you know, the stretch four, stretch center, and Chris Bosh who can pull you out and he can shoot the jump shot too. Look, you're going to have to defend those guys. So that's what I'm saying. Where does he fit in all of this, and what is his role going to be?
See, and it's hard to tell because the difference in the regular season and the playoffs is like the ability to expose weaknesses.
Yes.
So they're going to pick on Amari, man, in the playoffs because they know he it's not even like he doesn't have lateral quickness. But he doesn't utilize it.
Yep.
So he's going to be a liability on defense.
And so you take, like I was saying, if you do put a lineup in with him at center, you got, or however you do it, if he's playing a power forward or center or whatever, who's he going to guard, especially when they're playing Miami? You know, I think it's going to be tough for him. And with that being said, who comes out of the East then to compete with Miami? Who is it?
I don't know. I don't think it's Chicago, even though they're incredible defensively. And to me, it wouldn't matter if D-Rose was playing or not. They don't score enough points be a contender.
Here's a team that's kind of sneaking up on everybody. We've talked about them once in the history of this podcast. They are one game behind Miami, and that's Atlanta. They're 20-10.
We're not going to talk about the Hawks.
Because you know what they'll do. Nah. You know what's going to happen?
They're like the Phoenix Suns of the West.
And they're going to get in, and then they may win a series, and then the second they'll fall apart.
And they'll play well for a series, and they'll make it interesting, but losing Joe Johnson.
Yep.
And, I mean, you can kind of eat in the West. I mean, in the East when you got Milwaukee and Charlotte.
Yep. Yep.
And you can eat a little bit. Orlando.
Yep.
You can do the Nets. You can eat a little bit and kind of, you know, pad your stats a little bit on those teams because they're – you know, they're a lot weaker. What would they be if they were in the West? What place would they be in?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Be fourth in the...
Right. It'll be a division. Totally different story.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think they're a threat at all.
You can't really take
well, then, then there's no one to stop them.
And they have no go-to guy. They really have no go-to guy.
I mean, who's leading them in points? Probably Horford or
Josh Smith.
Yeah, Josh
who's
Smith.
A good player.
And Lou Williams can score. But
if Josh Smith is your best player, then you're average team.
Especially scoring the ball, if he's your leading scorer. So.
Yeah, if it's 5 seconds on the clock and you got to give him the rock, it's tight.
Right, definitely. So, look, I think that was great NBA talk. Another, you know what, I do want to bring up the Philadelphia 76ers real quick. I wish Bynum was healthy. That's a whole nother show. I got to go in on Andrew Bynum, man. He's just, you know, if Andrew Bynum's with Philadelphia, I think they're a whole different team. But I don't know if he's serious. So that's for another show. But I think what we'll do is we'll get into some, we can go into some this or that. Tone, you want to do some this or that?
Yeah, let me start with Jabbar here.
This or that?
This or that?
I'm nervous.
You ready? You may or may not have heard of these people.
Okay.
Tom Brady or Joe Montana?
Tom Brady.
Yeah. All right.
Can I explain why?
You don't need to, but you can, yes.
I want to explain why.
Good.
Because he's done more with less. Tom Brady had Hall of Famers everywhere.
Joe Montana did, you mean?
I'm sorry. Joe Montana had Hall of Famers everywhere. You got Roger Craig. You got Jerry Rice. The other guy,
Ronnie Lott.
Taylor, who's not a Hall of Famer. But you got studs everywhere. The fullback was even a stud.
Yep.
And you know, you got Charles Haley's and yep. Ronnie Lott's everywhere. Not to take anything away from him, but Tom Brady has got it done with Deion Branch.
Tom Brady has one of the best coaches in history at the helm.
So did Joe Montana. Yep.
I'm gonna.
He created.
He's not Belichick.
He created the West Coast offense.
Yes.
But not Belichick-esque. Belichick's sneaky.
But he was Belichick before Belichick. I'm not saying he's better than Belichick. I'm not gonna have that. I'm not gonna argue that one. But
I get your point. But what better baton pass than the pass to Steve Young?
That's incredible, isn't it?
Besides the Favre and Rodgers thing, there's not much else.
I mean,
yeah, that's
I got to take the other side of that coin. I got to say, Cool Joe, 4 Super Bowls. He never lost a Super Bowl. I mean, not to mention, and I will say this too, that he went to a totally different organization and he led the Chiefs to the AFC Championship. And the Chiefs were really not that good of a team.
The Chefs.
For those 2 years, I mean, he had those guys playing at a high level. That's when I knew Joe Montana was a good quarterback.
You put Brady on the Jaguars, they're going to the playoffs.
Oh, I don't know if I can say that.
Not this year.
Maybe Peyton Manning, but
so why is?
I don't even think Peyton. No way. I got a Joe Montana.
Quarterback influence is huge, man.
So you're saying it's 2-1? We got.
Oh yeah, Cool Joe. Yeah. I'm an old Cool Niners Joe. Fan though.
That's okay.
No, but I'm saying. But this is what we want in this or that. It don't. It's
if we all agree,
opinion,
it's not fun.
It's not fun, and we don't qualify it. So however you want to, however you want to do it, you do it.
Except for Tom Brady, come on.
So if you put Joe Montana with Deion Branch and Troy Brown, they win it?
I mean, I'm pretty sure those receivers he had in Kansas City weren't that good. Wendell Davis.
Hold on. Now, hold on. You can't put too much stock in making the playoffs when the Seahawks made it with 6 wins 1 year.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, no, I'm
it
just
ain't,
saying.
Like, making the playoffs isn't. It's an accomplishment, but it's not really worth.
10-6 and 11-5, man, with the Chiefs. I mean.
Okay, I'll give you that.
All right, let's go. Let's move on to something we're more familiar with, maybe NBA. Here, I'm gonna go Zach, Reggie Miller, or Ray Allen.
You know what?
It's a good one. I'm glad you wrote this.
I made this and
no brainer.
It is. You know what? I'm gonna have to go with Reggie Miller due to the legend of what he did to the Knicks. The 8 seconds when he pulled that off. He's stone cold. I mean, he was. I mean, if it wasn't for Jordan, that man would have probably I think Indiana could have maybe won a finals. So I'm gonna go with Reggie.
It's a no-brainer, Reggie Miller, man.
I gotta go Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller versus the Knicks.
This is of course, and I'm a huge Knicks guy, but I love Reggie Miller because he's the biggest heartbreaker, one of the biggest heartbreakers of all time. And just look at it like this: when Reggie Miller steps into an arena, 25,000 people hate him,
right?
Because they know he's about to get it done,
right?
And he's the ultimate clutch player.
No question, he's getting it done.
All right, I'm gonna go. I'll go back to Jabbar on this one. Martin or In Living Color?
Martin.
Martin. Wow. Hey, he's quick on this or that. Martin. He don't waste no time. You know, Martin. Usually me, I'm thinking. This
In Living Color was before his time, and it was like super classic. And the Jim Carreys, and they had studs grow out of that. But Martin was the last show that I would be doing something and I had to rush home to watch it, man. Martin, from the characters to him, one guy doing all of the characters, and us, we remember more lines from Martin than we do from In Living Color. Even though In Living Color, you know, you remember the J-Lo and them and the dancers as much as, you know, and you got your Fire Marshal Bills, but I say Martin. Maybe it's personal, but Martin is a top.
It sounds pretty
five
personal.
All time.
Yeah, all time what do you got? Show.
No, I'm throwing it to you. I'm
you're going
to
throw it to me?
Go ahead.
Yeah,
I got
to go In Living Color, man.
Okay.
With the caveat that I never watched Martin.
Okay.
I know, and I used to watch a ton of HBO growing up, stuff I shouldn't have been watching, you know?
Right.
But I never seen Martin, but I love In Living Color. I love David Alan Greer. I'm a huge David Alan Greer fan.
Yeah, he's a real deal.
Jim Carrey was great on that.
Tommy Davis, and they got some classic guys come
some
out of
great
that.
Guys came out of that.
Another thing, though, Martin's on every night, 4 shows.
That is true.
You can't find In Living Color.
You don't see In Living Color too much except on Century.
It used to be
Who
on,
watches
it was
Century?
On FX, I think, for a while.
Who you going with, Zach? Zach, who you going with?
Martin was iconic, especially me, you know, being in high school and watching Martin. He's somebody that, I mean, from his style, I wanted to have my hair cut like Martin for a while. I wanted to dress like Martin for a while. I thought Martin was cutting edge at that time. You know, you learned a lot about, like, relationships from him and Gina. And, I mean, it was a funny show, but it was like, man, like, and it was cool because they were just good friends, man. Like, you go in there and, like, you felt at home with Cole and all of them. So, I mean, yeah, I got to go with Martin. That was iconic, man.
How about stand-up, Martin or Chris Rock?
Chris Rock?
Chris Rock's better.
Okay.
Chris Rock's
I'm glad we're on the same page.
Chris Rock is a professional comedian.
Yeah.
Yep. He's a professional, man.
He's yep. He's made some crappy movies, though.
Yeah, he's made some bad movies.
He's not great.
All right, okay. I'm glad we're on the same page.
So is Eddie Murphy, black man. Eddie Murphy made some
movies, too. But he's made some good stuff, too.
Yeah, right.
All right, let's move on. I'm sorry, guys. Bane or Joker? I'm going to go Zach here because I know he wants to
answer
this.
Did you see both the Batmans?
Yeah.
So.
I didn't see the latest one.
Okay. As the Joker was, like, psychologically, he was, like, on another level. But Bane started a revolution, man. I'm going to have to say, like, I watched that movie, and I was like, Bane is a bad boy. Always calm, cool. As bomb as Heath Ledger played the role of the Joker, I have to say that I think Bane was a better villain.
This is what I'll say. Heath Ledger made me watch all of the other Batmans. I saw the first one. And I saw the one with Heath Ledger.
You saw Jack Nicholson.
Yep. And I saw
Joker.
And I saw it twice.
Right.
Because he did such an outstanding job.
Yeah.
And it made me watch all of the rest of them. He was, every time he hit the screen, it was action.
Yeah.
And your eyes were on it just to see what he was going to say.
Right.
And see what he was going to do. He was in a complete zone. So I'm going Joker.
Well, and then how legendary is that role with his death at the end of that?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. That adds to the mystique.
That does. Yeah.
I haven't seen the Bane one, unfortunately. I'm one of the only humans in North America.
Hey, I just saw it. I got it for Christmas, Tone, and I watched it. So
you bring the Martin box set over.
I got you.
Tone, you see the Martin box set. You're going to have.
All right.
You're going to have a good time.
All right. Jabbar, then last one here. This is a lot.
This is big right here.
This is. Boys in the Hood or Menace to Society?
Boys in the Hood, because it was a better story. Menace to Society was more action, more drama, more things going on. But Boys in the Hood as a story, it was written a lot better. And I think it's more timeless. People still talking about it. You know, you got your Fishburne, your Ice Cube, what's the pretty boy name?
Cuba Gooding.
What's the pretty boy's
Angela
name?
Morris Chestnut.
You got Morris Chestnut. Ooh,
yeah, Angela
ooh.
Bassett, Nia Long.
Yeah, it was serious, man. And it's something that I think my kids would watch or look at like, man, that was it. That was one of the ones. And Menace Society was entertaining, but I don't think it was much of a comparison.
This is no lie. I have a 4-year-old daughter at home. She looks at Ice Cube, and every time she sees Ice Cube, she says, Daddy, is this Boys in the Hood? I don't know how she knows it. I don't know what that's about. As much as I mean, the characters in Menace Society, the old dogs, MC8's character, you know, Chauncey, all those guys. I mean, how funny it was.
Right. It was funny. Yeah, it was entertaining.
Yeah, it was very entertaining. You know, I do think from a story standpoint, I do agree. You got to see more sides of the inner city.
Yeah.
You got to see the Cuba Gooding Jr. go on and go off to college. You got to see
the relationship,
you know,
the
senseless violence. Yeah. You know, you got to see, you know, having a father and, you know, how the role that played in Trey's life and different things like that. So, yeah, I would have to go with Boys in the Hood. From that standpoint, but I still think Menace Society was a great film too.
Man, I'm gonna dog it on this one again. I haven't seen Menace to Society. I saw Boys in the Hood way back when I was like 8 or 10 or something, and I liked it. So would you just want to compare some South Central early 90s movies.
Yeah, some South Central early 90s. I'm sorry, so sometimes. And then I feel bad. I'm dating myself. KT's dating his, you know, dating himself with some of the stuff that we asked. But, you know, hey,
no,
that's
it's
why
good.
It's
good.
Or that. You
I'm
know?
Learning.
So next time, maybe, you know, we'll have Tone come with the this or that questions and see how that works too, you know.
I'll be like Rugrats or Doug. Some stuff you're like, my
and
kids
I
are
say,
watching that
Rugrats.
Stuff.
That's over my head right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, because your kids are watching. That's how you know about it.
Well, I want to say, you know what? In closing, I want to say this is a great show. Man, Jabbar, you came in and held it down. I think we put together a great show, had a lot of great conversation about the NBA, and we look forward to having you for the next couple weeks.
Hey, I just want to thank KT, Tone, and Zach for the opportunity to sit in. I'm here when you need me. When I'm not here, I'm home watching hoops and basketball or either coaching. So I'm here to fill in whenever, or y'all need a, you know, somebody to come in and a different voice or an extra opinion. I'm here,
definitely,
man. It's a pleasure.
Definitely. And shout out to KT, man. We miss you, man. First show
travel
without you.
Travel safely,
we miss
man.
You. Travel safely. All that.
Have an awesome trip, man.
Man, have a fun trip, KT. All right. We out.
Let me
Peace.
Borrow $2.
The flow. I might be busy. I sound more baby, yo. Some things you just can't cancel, you know. Because I never phone need.